In just a moment, you will hear Paul Manning reporting from Paris the latest news from the European war fronts and the human highlights behind the news. Mr. Manning, brilliant young war correspondent and commentator, is brought to you by the Sperry Corporation. On behalf of Sperry Gyroscope Company, Vickers Incorporated, Ford Instrument Company, and the Waterbury Tool Division of Vickers Incorporated. Every Sunday morning at 11, Paul Manning reports the news of the fighting front to the men and women of Sperry and their fellow workers on the home front. And now here is Paul Manning, as just transcribed here in New York, with the news and the human highlights behind the news.
This is Paul Manning speaking from Paris. Today, the unconditional surrender of all German forces in northwest Germany becomes effective. There will be no more hostilities in Holland, Denmark, the Frisian Islands, Heligoland, and North Germany. This is the surrender which was so dramatically announced Friday by Field Marshal Montgomery. And this morning, Germans are streaming back into the British lines by the tens of thousands. It is the same in other parts of Germany, where yesterday, two full German armies signed peace terms demanded by General Devers, who was commander of the 6th American Army Group. There are now only two large areas of German resistance. Norway, where an estimated 150,000 to 200,000 troops hold out, and Czechoslovakia, where the 7th German Army, commanded by Field Marshal Kesselring, continues to fight on. The Germans here are battling not only American troops on the Czech border, but Soviet forces in the east. And now we hear that small groups of Czech patriots have seized Prague Radio. The Czech uprising is similar to the outburst of fighting which occurred 4 days before American troops entered Paris last August. Small arms gunfire, the seizure of a few buildings, but that is all. Of real importance, however, is the knowledge that there still remains a flame of resistance in Prague, Czechoslovakia. It is likely that the surrender of Kesselring's forces can be expected at any time. They will likely surrender to American troops before capitulating to the Russians. German surrender, however, does mean the end of hostilities for several million American kids, and this is of the highest importance. Today there is no more bloodshed, no more fighting for kids who serve in the 1st, 9th, and 15th American armies. It is the day so many families in the United States have been waiting for. Yet there is still no complete capitulation yet. General Patton's 3rd Army is still fighting. This morning, they are 25 miles southwest of Pilsen. They have captured numerous villages and towns along the Danube. 20 miles of Czechoslovakia separates them now from the Russians. Today, it's been announced that one more prison camp has been overrun by the Allies. Deep in the Alps, this prison camp held many political figures whose names you know. Edouard Daladier and Paul Reynaud, former premiers of France. Generals Gamelin and Vagon, who tried so ineffectually to stem the German advance into France in 1940. The former Chancellor of Austria, Kurt von Schuschnigg, who was also a prisoner at this camp, as well as Leon Blum. But they had both been spirited away a few hours before the camp was taken. Such news, of course, is merely a sidelight on the big story we all wait for. The full-blown official declaration that all fighting has ended in Germany. This news has been imminent for days. This morning, even Grand Admiral Karl Dönitz terms a continuation of fighting in Norway as senseless. On the basis of this, and unreliable but unsubstantiated reports here, you may expect such a declaration fairly quickly now. Certainly, Paris is prepared for such news. Street lamps have been polished. The headlights in the Place de la Concorde now operate after years of darkness. There is no more blackout in this city. The people wait only for an official statement, and then you will see pandemonium in the French capital. The recent false peace announcement gave us some idea of what will occur when people at that time, for a brief hour or two, danced in the streets and shouted from housetops. I'll be at Supreme Headquarters when the military announcement is made. But for sentimental reasons, I would prefer London. That is the city I saw stand up to the German bombings of 1940. Indelibly written in my memory are those nights when I walked back from Fleet Street to my hotel in the Strand. Firebombs gave these streets a horrible, Dante-like beauty. The Thames alight from the reflection of fires which blazed on the far side of that river. Girls who had never done an honest day's work in their lives, now driving ambulances, holding up fine to the sight of dead and wounded until they had finished their night of work. Then, at daybreak, spilling over into tears as sort of a relief, but saying nevertheless, as one did to me, never, if I live 1,000 years, will I become used to the sight of sudden death. The Battle of London has now become immortalized, until now it may seem to many an old story. But today, after you have seen the horrors of German death factories like Buchenwald, as I have, you shudder at the sight and at the thought of how close civilization came to ending. The fine thread which sustained our way of life almost snapped. But the simple, unreasoning faith of the British during that period sustained us all. Britain, America, Russia. This strength was not sufficient to defeat Germany, of course. It needed both America and Russia for that. But neither America, and especially Russia, must forget that if England had accepted the terms brought to Britain by Rudolf Hess, then Europe would have indeed belonged to Hitler for 1,000 years. Mistakes committed by Hitler himself helped bring about his downfall, of course. In July 1940, he failed to invade England when this was possible. The armies of Dunkirk were still disorganized, and those terrible assaults by the Luftwaffe early that summer had virtually wiped out the RAF. German losses had been enormous, but only recently have we learned that the Royal Air Force had lost all but 46 frontline fighters. 46 planes to stem the German Air Force. And the German Air Force suddenly quit because they didn't know. The German invasion of Russia was another fatal mistake, as you know. It took Stalingrad to prove this. And it has taken us ever since to reach the point where we are today. On the verge of full military peace in Europe, anxiously awaiting for the official word which will tell us that the long struggle in one theater of war is at an end. What will follow in Europe after peace is anyone's guess. Events do, however, seem to be settling into a pattern. The big three are determined that Germany will never again become a military power.
In the years to come,
she may try again, but will not succeed. Russia will be the dominating power of continental Europe. Today in France, there is fear of this. The terrific latent power of the Soviet was demonstrated on the Elbe River when American columns linked up with Russian spearheads. You saw for miles the soldiers of the Ukraine, soldiers from Central Russia, from Siberia. There were horses and wagons and vodka, an enormous spirit. It was truly Mother Russia. Buoyant, young, driving, not too skilled in the use of mechanization, but overcoming that handicap each day. The French correspondents who saw these friendly masses also saw behind it the power which has come to Europe. Whether some people like it or not, it has come here to stay. As the months pass by, there will be friction between the two great powers in Russia over who is to have charge of what. That has already happened at San Francisco on the Polish question. But never, and this will continue to be so, was there greater need for tact, patience, and understanding. This does not mean abject appeasement by any power. We have come too far along the road for that. But it does mean fulfilling an obligation to those who have died to give us one more chance to create a world we can live in. Live in peace, in comfort, with reasonable goodwill towards all. Russia is as obligated to this as America and Britain. Soldiers I've talked to are following the San Francisco conference with immense interest. They see in it the first of many instruments which might guarantee that their children will not have to repeat what they have just gone through. Letters from soldiers tell of their immense yearning to return home, to take up their former way of life. But these all letters also say to me, the big people must fix it up this time, so that no one has to leave America again if he doesn't want to. That means permanent peace. Representative soldiers such as these have written to me. Sergeant Ambrose Mamalis, whose kid sister, Mary, works for Ford Instrument Company. He's in a bomb squadron in England, overseas 2 years now on leave from Ford. And from Germany, Private First Class Cosmo Fazio of a tank destroyer battalion, formerly of Sperry. The infantry in Italy claim Private V.A. Salvatore, who worked in the Vickers plant at home, and now knows that home is indeed closer than it's ever been. Private First Class Paulie Tresa is in France, presumably now in Germany, but his letters sound cheerful indeed. Private First Class Thomas O'Brien of a heavy weapons company, whose foreman at Forge was Mr. Rathkins, says, why not? The situation is well in hand now, and yet he asked me to give his best to the gang he once worked with. Private Alfred H. Steen, who worked in Building 2 at Forge, is a member of that famous 101st Airborne Division who fought at Bastogne and created an American epic. Private Steen has little to say, understandably, except a sincere, hi gang. And so these letters go. The wish for home. The desire to let you people know that boys here are thinking of boys and girls there. This week on the Elbe River, I spent most of a night driving through the deserted streets of a German city. It was a Gestapo hunt, and the soldiers I drove with recreated for me what seemed to be a breath of old New York and old Chicago. When American troops had arrived in this city, the Gestapo men went underground. They changed clothes, names, and addresses, and then hoped they were secure. But denunciation has become such a part of German life that one man who was caught disclosed other names, and the race began. Through dark streets, and some apartments were deserted, of course, but in others we found those men who had destroyed so many people. Some had to be taken by gunfire. One committed suicide. Others came along docilely. But none pleaded ignorance of what they had done. They knew such tactics were useless. When confronted by the probing questions of young American soldiers who proved that in this sphere, the German, too, is lost when confronted with the unexpected. Motion pictures have made us all think the Gestapo brilliant and cunning. But in the flesh, they're dull and no match for American soldiers who track them down. This is Paul Manning speaking from Paris. I return you now to WOR in New York.
You have been listening to Paul Manning in Paris, reporting to the men and women of the Sperry Corporation and their fellow workers on the war production front. Here is the last-minute war situation according to bulletins reaching the WOR newsroom since Mr. Manning's report was received and transcribed here in New York this morning. British news sources hint that Germany's total surrender on all fronts is imminent. This is just a hint and adds no substantial expectation to the optimism just expressed by Mr. Manning. However, the British cabinet has held an unusual Sunday session. The Prague radio, heard in Belgium, says that negotiations are underway for the surrender of all German forces in Czechoslovakia. Allied tanks are said to be nearing the Czech capital. American Fifth Army troops have entered Austria from Italy through two Alpine passes. And that's the news. The companies of the Sperry Corporation are devoting all their time to the development and manufacture of Sperry precision instruments and controls for our armed forces on land, at sea, and in the air. Listen next Sunday morning at 11 to Paul Manning and the human news behind the war news. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.